We now come to questions to Prime Minister Giles Watling.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question one, if you please.
Mr. Speaker, I know the whole House will join me in congratulating Vaughan Gething on his election as Welsh Labour leader and expected election as First Minister of Wales, and also offering Mark Drakeford our best wishes on his retirement. The government I lead will always work tirelessly to benefit the lives of people across the United Kingdom, and I look forward to working constructively with the new First Minister to deliver for the people of Wales. Mr. Speaker, this morning I had meetings with ministerial colleagues and others. In addition to my duties in this House, I shall have further such meetings later today.
Just one.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The people of Clacton have had a tough time with the cost of living, and I'm doing everything I can. I am doing everything I can to support them. With that in mind, does he agree with me, my right honourable friend, agree with me that cutting inflation is the very best way to do that? And that today's statistics are very welcome, and can he reassure my constituents that he'll continue working hard to get inflation as low as possible to protect their savings, help with their bills, and give them the financial security they deserve?
Well, Mr. Speaker, today's figures show that our plan is working. Inflation has fallen to 3.4% from its peak over 11%, down by almost 70%. The steepest fall since the 80s and now at the lowest level since September 2021. And people's pay packets are going further, with real wages growing for 8 months in a row and taxes being cut by £900 for the average worker. And that is why we need to stick to the plan to deliver a brighter future for our country.
Here comes the Leader of the Opposition, Keir Starmer.
Can I thank the Prime Minister for his words in welcoming Vaughan Gething to his post as First Minister of Wales? As the first black leader of any European government, it's a historic moment that speaks to the progress and values of modern-day Wales. And I also pay tribute to Mark Drakeford for his long, steady service in Wales. Mr. Speaker, violent prisoners released early because the Tories wrecked the criminal justice system. 3,500 small boat arrivals already this year because the Tories lost control of the borders. The NHS struggling to see people because the Tories broke it. Millions paying more on their mortgages. A budget that hit pensioners. A £46 billion hole in his sums. Why is the Prime Minister so scared to call an election?
Well, Mr. Speaker, as I said in January, my working assumption is that the election will be in the second half of the year. But I must say, I thought that out of everybody, he'd actually be the most grateful, Mr. Speaker, because he's now actually got time to come up with a plan for Britain. We're all looking forward to finally seeing it.
We're ready. Just call it. Mr. Speaker, he talks of plan. Let's just take his Rwanda policy. When they first announced this gimmick, they claimed it would settle tens of thousands of people. The Home Office then whittled it down to a mere 300. Four times that number have already arrived this month, and the backlog stands at 130,000. Can the Prime Minister see any flaw in his plan to deport less than 1% of that backlog?
Mr. Speaker, since I became Prime Minister, the number of small boat crossings are actually down by over a third, Mr. Speaker. And that's because we've doubled National Crime Agency funding, we've increased the illegal enforcement raids by 70%, we've closed 7,500 bank accounts, deported 24,000 illegal migrants, and processed over 112,000 cases, more than at any point in the last two decades, Mr. Speaker. And it's crystal clear, as we're seeing from the Labour Party's opposition in this House, while we're committed to stopping the boats, the Labour Party would keep them coming.
The tragedy is, we know the Prime Minister doesn't even believe in the Rwanda gimmick. He tried to stop funding it, but he's now so diminished that his entire focus is stopping his MPs holding the sword of Damocles above his head. Yeah. Perhaps even literally in the case of the Leader of the House. Yeah. His great hope is to percolate his party with a couple of empty planes, praying they won't notice when the flights stop going, the boat's still coming, and the costs keep mounting. How has he managed to spend £600 million of taxpayer money on a gimmick to deport 300 people?
Yeah. Mr. Speaker, it's crystal clear. Not only does the Labour Party not have a plan to fix this issue, but the truth is they don't actually care about fixing this issue. He talks about the gangs. When we gave the police new powers to crack down on the people smuggling gangs, he spent months campaigning and voting against it. Thanks to our new laws, 900 criminals have been arrested. 450 have been convicted, serving over 370 years behind bars. If it was up to him, those criminals would still be out on our streets, Mr. Speaker. And the truth is, if he wasn't the Labour leader, he'd still want to be their lawyer.
Speaker, I've prosecuted more people smugglers than he's had helicopter rides, and that's a lot. And this, I've done it. Rwanda gimmick is going to cost the taxpayer £2 million for every one of his 300 people that they deport. And I know the Prime Minister likes to spend a lot on jet setting, but that's some plane ticket. It's the cost of Tory chaos, and it's working people who are paying the price. The man he made his immigration minister let the cat out of the bag when he said the Prime Minister's symbolic flights will not provide a credible deterrent. And we know the Prime Minister himself thought it wouldn't work. If the people selling this gimmick don't believe in it, why should the country?
Mr. Speaker, he's very keen to talk about who he prosecuted. He's a bit less keen to talk about when he defended Hizbut Tahrir, Mr. Speaker. But when it comes to this question of how to deal with people who are here illegally, his values are simply not those of the British people. After all, this is the person who campaigned to stop the deportation of foreign dangerous criminals, Mr. Speaker. A dangerous criminal was jailed for dealing Class A drugs after he fought to keep him here. A gangmaster was convicted of carrying a knife after he fought to keep him here. So whether it's representing terrorists or campaigning for criminals, it's clear whose side he's on, and it's not the British people.
It's genuinely sad to see him reduced to this nonsense. And let's take another example that I started with. After 14 years of Tory chaos in the prison system, the Justice Secretary is reduced to begging the Prime Minister either to send fewer offenders to prison or to release them even earlier. I must say I've got sympathy for anyone trying to get an answer out of the Prime Minister. So what's it going to be? Fewer criminals behind bars in the first place, or more released early onto our streets? Which is it?
Mr. Speaker, thanks to our record and plan, violent crime has fallen by 50%, Mr. Speaker. We've recruited more police officers, given them more powers, and kept serious offenders in prison for longer. What's his record? He voted against greater protection for our emergency workers, opposed tougher sentences for violent criminals, and failed to give police the powers they need. It would be back to square one with Labour, soft on crime and soft on criminals.
You can see why he doesn't want an election. Why his party have lost faith in. Why half his cabinet are lining up to replace him. No answers, no plan, no clue. And the Prime Minister has never had the courage to stand up to his party. So let me help him out and say to them what he wishes he could. The mortgage mayhem, the waiting list, the criminals walking free, they are the cost of Tory chaos. And if they can't bring themselves to stop the endless games and gimmicks, stop putting themselves before country. They should pack up, go home, and waste somebody else's time. It wasn't that difficult, was it, Prime Minister?
Mr. Speaker,
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, he talks about his ideas, but we're 2 weeks on from the budget. The Shadow Chancellor found time to make a one-hour speech last night, and we still don't know how they're going to pay for their £28 billion black hole. But while he tries to talk down Britain and the progress that we are making, today's news shows that the plan is working. Inflation down, Mr. Speaker. Energy bills down. Wages up, pensions up, and taxes cut by £900. And that is the choice. Higher taxes and back to square one with Labour, or tax cuts and real change with the Conservatives.
Mr. Speaker, the UK birth rate is falling, while those requiring fertility treatment to conceive is rising. There are no employment rights attached to those undertaking fertility treatment, no paid time off work. Would the Prime Minister join me in encouraging employers, large and small, across the United Kingdom to sign up to the Fertility Workplace Pledge, which I have launched with Fertility Matters at Work, LGBT Mummies, Fertility Network UK and many others to support those undertaking fertility when they're in work?
Well, can I start by thanking my honourable friend for her excellent work campaigning on this issue? And she is right, employers should offer their staff understanding, support and flexibility whilst they're undergoing fertility treatment. And the best way to improve the experience of those undergoing treatment, both women and their partners, is through voluntary approaches. And that's why I would join her encouraging all companies to sign up to the Fertility Workplace Pledge.
SNP leader Stephen Flynn.
Mr. Speaker, with his backbenchers looking for a unity candidate to replace him, which of the now numerous born-again Thatcherites on the Labour front bench does he believe best fits the bill?
Well, Mr. Speaker, it was surprising to hear all this talk about the 1970s from the Shadow Chancellor in particular. But then if you see what's happening in places like Birmingham, where taxes are going up by 21%, Mr. Speaker, services are being cut, whether it's social care, children's services, or indeed in some streets, literally the lights are being turned off. It was unsurprising why they're talking about the 70s, and I can just say what they've done to Birmingham, the Conservatives will never let them do to Britain.
Of course, Mr. Speaker, there's a serious point to be made here, because the IFS have warned of the conspiracy of silence which exists between the Labour Party and the Conservative Party when it comes to £18 billion of looming public sector cuts. Indeed, just last night, they actually outlined that the fiscal rules of the Labour Party and the Conservative Party are in effect identical. So with such continuity on offer, Mr. Speaker, the public are right to be anti-Westminster, aren't they?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm surprised to hear him quoting the IFS, because the IFS also described the recent SNP budget as, in their words, misleading, and said in their words that pain is almost certainly coming. It is a savage tax and axe budget, Mr. Speaker, a savage tax and axe budget. Because here's the reality of it: whilst NHS spending in England is going up in real terms, in Scotland it is going down, Mr. Speaker. And while taxes are being cut by the UK government, it is the SNP government that is putting them up. And that is the contrast. Where the SNP or indeed Labour are in charge, it's working people that pay the price.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Prime Minister quite rightly often criticises the Scottish Government for the extra tax they put on residents. Well, in my part of Cornwall, we have an extra tax called the Tamar Toll. I've been working on a petition with my neighbour, the MP for Plymouth Moorview. Would the Prime Minister make our part of Cornwall, of our country, more competitive, by losing this extra tax and help our country level out, our community level out.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I thank my honourable friend for raising this important local issue. Any application for a toll revision will be considered by the Transport Secretary at the right opportunity when it's been received. But I am told there are also plans in place to create a new locally led focal group of key stakeholders to ensure that there is a real opportunity to make their views heard about crossings in the future. And I know that my honourable friend will play an active role in that group.
Sir Geoffrey Donalds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday saw the Northern Ireland Assembly for the first time in its history exercise its new veto powers to prevent the application of new EU law that would harm our ability to trade with the rest of the United Kingdom. This is something which the DUP campaigned to achieve when others were calling for rigorous implementation of the protocol. And to his credit, the Prime Minister was able to work with us to deliver the real changes to the protocol that will help restore Northern Ireland's place within the United Kingdom and its internal market. Will the Prime Minister now assure me that the Government will continue to faithfully implement the measures outlined in the command paper safeguarding the Union, including fully restoring our place within the United Kingdom and its internal market and ending the unnecessary checks on goods moving from Great Britain to Northern Ireland?
Well, I want to congratulate my honourable friend again on his leadership of unionism, and I agree it's been a very encouraging few weeks, and I salute the work of both the First Minister and Deputy First Minister in representing the future of Northern Ireland. And I can assure him that we will implement our commitments at pace, including further regulations to be laid before this House in coming days to take power to deliver those commitments on UK internal trade, also hosting the first meeting of the UK East West Council and the establishment of Intertrade UK. But it comes down to this fundamental point, and I know that he will agree. Northern Ireland's place is stronger in the Union with locally elected politicians in place representing the needs of all parts of the community.
Reverend Lee.
Noting the NAO report today on the spiralling costs of using ex-military bases for migrants, and noting that the Home Office has announced this week that they are to reduce the projected numbers at RAF Scampton down to 800. Will the Prime Minister ensure that his Minister for Immigration meets West Lindsay District Council and myself urgently so that we can release most of the base for regeneration of this iconic RAF base, the home of the Red Arrows and the Dam Busters?
Well, can I pay tribute to the way that my right honourable friend has engaged with the government on this important issue for his local community? As acknowledged, our plan is working to cut the use of asylum hotels, and we will have closed 100 hotels next week on top of cutting small boat arrivals. But I know he's talking to the Minister for Legal Migration about how best to accommodate a smaller number of asylum seekers safely at RAF Scampton, whilst recognising the Council's ambitious plans for regeneration. And let me tell him, I fully support those discussions, and the Government is committed to the site being used for accommodation for the shortest possible time and then released to the benefit of the local community.
Mr. Speaker, our NHS is at breaking point. My constituent was told he needed a gallbladder operation after a visit to A&E. He waited in hospital, nil by mouth, all day, no operation. He's then told to stay overnight or risk his place on the list. So he sits in a hot, smelly, windowless waiting room for 8 hours on a plastic chair. Then a gurney comes with no pillow, and that's where he sleeps. And the next day, the nurses say, no operation, there just aren't any beds. His wife told me the Conservatives are running the NHS into the ground. His experience, given so many others across the country sharing that experience, how can he say otherwise?
I'm very sorry to hear about the Honourable Lady constituent experience, and I'm sure she'll be raising it with the local NHS Trust as well. What I would say is, of course, the NHS is recovering from a difficult 2 years, but it has received considerable backing from this government. Record investment, as was acknowledged by the NHS CEO just the other week, a plan to improve productivity in the future. And when it comes to beds, we've invested in 5,000 new beds over the last year, more ambulances, and all of that is contributing to lower waiting times, waiting lists coming down, and an improved A&E performance over last year.
Angela Richards.
Mr. Speaker, the people of the eastern villages of Guildford, the Clandons, the Horsleys, Effingham, Ripley, Send and Ockham have had enough. Unwanted development and villages taken out of the Greenbelt without promised infrastructure is why I've been calling for an immediate review of the local plan for the last 3 years. Does my right honourable friend agree with me that Labour's promise of concreting over the Greenbelt, even against the wishes of local MPs, would simply add insult to injury?
Well, Mr. Speaker, unlike both the Liberal Democrats and the Labour Party, who believe in top-down targets that decimate the Greenbelt, we believe in local people having a say over their local communities, which is why we are committed to protecting and enhancing the Greenbelt. The National Planning Policy includes strong protections to safeguard this important land. I know her local plan is currently under review by the Council, who have indicated they'll be updating it, and I hope the Honourable Member and her constituents engage with that process to help shape future at Guildford for future generations.
Kendrick.
Mr. Speaker, the EU Foreign Policy High Representative Joseph Borrell said on Monday that Israel is provoking famine in Gaza and using starvation as a weapon of war. President Biden has said that there should be no attack on Rafah without a plan to ensure the safety of more than 1 million people living there. Does the Prime Minister agree with High Representative Borrell and President Biden? Because I do, and we need a ceasefire. If he does agree, would he say so here in the chamber today?
Well, so as the Honourable Gentleman knows, I've explained our position repeatedly, but the findings from the IPC are gravely concerning. It's clear that the status quo is unsustainable, and we need urgent action now to avoid a famine. The UK is doing all it can to get more aid in and to prevent a worsening crisis. 2,000 tonnes of UK-funded food aid, including flour and hot meals, is being distributed by the World Food Programme in Gaza today, as we speak, enough to feed more than 275,000 people, and we will continue to do everything we can to alleviate the suffering that people are experiencing.
Sir Bill Wiggin, closed question.
Question number 9, sir.
Mr. Speaker, the Department for Education is mounting a significant intervention in Herefordshire's children's services. That includes expert improvement advice, a commissioner with statutory powers to direct the council, and a 2-year improvement partnership with Leeds. And I can assure my honourable friend that the department is closely monitoring the council's progress.
Sir Bill Wiggin.
I thank my right honourable friend for taking this situation, this terrible situation, so seriously. The permanent secretary from the Department of Education visited Hereford recently, and so he will know that the new Conservative Council are trying to mend the damage done by the previous Green and Independent Authority to far too many young people and their families. As a father, does he agree with me that progress is still far too slow? And so will he meet me and discuss what more we can do?
Well, like my honourable friend, I am concerned to hear that children in Herefordshire are not receiving the level of service that they should expect. And I know that ministers have revisited the Commissioner's latest report, and while some improvements have been made, I agree with him, it's also very clear that the pace of change is not what it should be. My honourable friend has been right to campaign tirelessly on this. I assure him ministers continue to hold the local authority for account, but of course I will be happy to meet with him to discuss his concerns further.
Mohammed Yassin.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Bedford Renal Unit is closed until further notice, while investigation into the water treatment unit are carried out. This is a major incident for the nearly 100 patients in Bedford, whose lives are now severely disrupted by the need to travel around 50 miles up to 4 times a week to access life-saving kidney dialysis. Will the Prime Minister commit all the necessary resources needed by East and North Hertfordshire Renal Unit services to urgently fix this major issue?
Well, I'm sorry to hear about the specific issue with the renal unit. I think he'll forgive me not being familiar with the exact details, but I'll make sure that we look into it in the department and that the NHS is being provided with all the support that they need to rectify the situation.
Sir Liam Fox.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Tomorrow is World Down Syndrome Day. We have made huge innovative strides in this country with the unanimous passing of the Down Syndrome Act in this House and initiatives such as yours, Mr. Speaker, to provide work placements here in the Palace of Westminster for people with Down Syndrome. There is an outstanding issue we have to deal with, however. While the time limit on abortion in the UK is 24 weeks gestation, for Down syndrome, due to an anomaly in the law, it is 40 weeks up to full term, something that many members may not understand. With cross-party support, I will be tabling an amendment to the Criminal Justice Bill to equalise the time limit in line with our disability and equality legislation. Surely we cannot accept in the 21st century that people with Down syndrome are second-class citizens in our country. Will the Prime Minister support the change?
Well, I'm grateful to my right honourable friend for his dedicated work in passing the Down Syndrome Act into law. And can I thank him also for highlighting World Down Syndrome Day, where we'll be hosting a reception in Number 10 to mark the occasion. As he knows, when the grounds for abortion were amended, Parliament agreed that doctors were best placed to make those difficult decisions with women and their families. And also, as he knows, it's been a long-standing convention that it would be for Parliament to decide whether to make any changes to the law on abortion, and that these issues have always been treated as an individual matter of conscience.
Anna Bardell.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Some of my Livingston constituents in Broxburn and Craigshill have the misfortune of living in houses built with rack concrete. Many of them can't get insurance, can't get mortgages, and one constituent told me very emotionally he cannot even afford a survey. So will the Prime Minister arrange for his ministers to meet with me to discuss how his government can fund local authority and devolve governments that didn't even exist when these houses were built, and give the support that was promised? We need action now.
Mr. Speaker, I'd happily look into the issue that the Honourable Lady raises, but in the first instance, I'm sure it would be a question for the SNP government in Scotland to answer, to make sure that they're providing for their constituents. And we have a strong track record of investing in local communities right across Scotland with our levelling up funding and investment partnerships. But when it comes to housing, obviously she'll know that that's a devolved area, but I'll happily look into the issue that she raises.
Andrew Rosendahl.
Mr. Speaker, sir, the Prime Minister should be aware that the people of Romford are appalled by the catastrophic reign of the current Mayor of London. Yes. So, does he agree that traditional boroughs like Havering should have more independence from City Hall? But in the meantime, to save London, shouldn't we sack Sadiq and elect Susan Hall as the next Mayor of our capital?
Well, can I pay tribute to the Honourable Member for Romford's championing of his area and his passion to preserve its character. Now, as he says, whilst there aren't current plans to redraw the boundaries, I can understand his desire, especially with London being run by the Labour Mayor, with nightlife being decimated, crime increasing, and the Mayor raising taxes on hard-working people by over 8%, London can certainly, Mr. Speaker, do better. And the only way for pride to be restored in London is with Susan Hall as its new London Mayor.
And Cardon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Last Sunday was the second anniversary of P&O Ferries' illegal sacking of 786 British seafarers. And despite what ministers have said, P&O has faced no sanction, and this government's new code of practice on fire and rehire would not stop it happening again. This Parliament will be the worst on record for living standards, and real wages are still worth less than they were in 2008. So why, after 14 years, has this government failed to deliver a better deal for workers across Britain?
Well, Mr. Speaker, in fact, as the Chancellor just recently pointed out, living standards are £1,700 higher in real terms than they were in 2010. And if he wants to do something to protect working people in this country, perhaps he should have a chat with his Shadow Chancellor about her plans to impose £28 billion of tax rises on everyone in our country.
Sarah Atherton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. After decades of a Labour MP, Wrexham was known as Spice Town, but not anymore. In the last 4 years, we've become a city with a £160 million investment zone, £20 million town fund, £23 million shared prosperity fund. We're soon to have the largest trading estate in Europe, with more jobs than job seekers. We've secured the future of Hightown Barracks, and Hollywood has boosted our football club. Sir, agree with me that it's this Conservative MP and this Conservative government.
My honourable friend has been an excellent campaigner for Wrexham, putting it on the map after years of decline under the Labour Party, the heart of one of Wales's investment zones, with our plan for towns helping to regenerate the local high street and improve public safety. And I can tell my honourable friend, with such a great campaigner like herself, the next 5 years will only look brighter for Wrexham.
Ashley Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Last week, the Prime Minister rightly called Conservative Party donor Frank Hester's comments about the Honourable Member for Hackney North and Stoke Newington racist. It has since emerged that Mr. Hester has made comments that a group of Indian members of staff should climb on the roof like on the roof of a train, and has made reference to Asian Corner. Does the Prime Minister agree with me that these comments are racist? Yes or no?
Mr. Speaker, I addressed this last week, and the Minister for Women and Equalities addressed this just half an hour ago.
Father of the House, Sir Peter Bottomley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You and the Prime Minister will be welcome in the Arran district of my constituency, where developers are trying to build over every vineyard, horticultural nursery, and agricultural land. Could he point out that the last place to build homes is prime agricultural land, especially in an area where developers have enough permissions to meet the Council's targets for the next 5 years?
Well, Mr. Speaker, my honourable friend is right that sustainable development must be at the heart of our planning system, and that's why we're committed to meeting the housing needs of our communities by building homes, the right homes, in the right places, making sure that everyone uses best use of brownfield land, conserving our countryside. But that's also the point that he makes, which is important. As I've been crystal clear, we must protect agricultural land. Food security is incredibly important, and we need our farmers to produce more Great British food.
And this water.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We know the Prime Minister has received advice about the legality of the Israel-Gaza war,
yes,
that he's had time to consider it,
yes,
that governments can and do publish such advice.
Yes.
So will he tell the House what steps he is taking to act on that advice in reviewing UK arms sales,
yeah,
in supporting proceedings in the ICJ and, yeah, ICC, yeah, and in exercising the UK vote in the UN Security Council?
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we continue to call for Israel to respect international humanitarian law and for civilians to be protected. Too many civilians have been killed, and we want to see Israel take greater care to limit its operations to military targets. These are points that both I and the Foreign Secretary have repeatedly made to Prime Minister Netanyahu. We have previously assessed that Israel is committed and capable of complying with international humanitarian law, and of course we always keep this under review.
Vickers.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Prime Minister will be aware of plans by National Grid to build 50-metre-high pylons, a network through much of rural Lincolnshire, which is causing much consternation, particularly in rural villages. Could my right honourable friend assure my residents that when finally ministers consider the consultations that come forward from National Grid, that they will give sympathetic consideration to putting some of the sections underground?
Well, Mr. Speaker, my honourable friend is absolutely right to raise the concerns of his constituents, and he will recognise the balance that we need to strike by making sure that we give our country the energy security that needs, but do that in a way that is respectful of the impact on local communities. I'll be sure to make sure that ministers take into account the concerns that he's raised and that all the views of his local constituents are taken into account.
Final question, Terry Alley.
Mr. Speaker, given the Prime Minister's and his government's days are numbered and will soon be in opposition, will he use the small amount of time available to him and join the 138 United Nations member states and recognise the state of Palestine?
Mr. Speaker, our position has been consistently clear that we will recognise the state of Palestine when it makes most beneficial sense for the overall peace process. Of course we're committed to an ultimate two-state solution, but in the here and now, what we are calling for is an immediate, sustained humanitarian pause which would allow for the safe release of hostages, including British nationals, and more aid to reach Gaza. And we would urge all sides to seize the opportunity and continue negotiations to reach an agreement as soon as possible.
Please, Prime Minister's questions.